matter of Smith versus the Newark Community Health Centers Incorporated. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Margaret Finland for the plaintiff.
Good morning, counsel. Ms. Quinlan, please go ahead.
So Cassandra Smith was a patient at the Newark Community Health Center Clinic. This accident occurred on February 14th, 2019. She came out of an examination room and fell on a wet floor that had been recently mopped. This is about charitable immunity. Charitable immunity is an affirmative defense, so the burden is fully on the defendant to prove all of the elements. And the act requires that a nonprofit organization be organized exclusively for religious, charitable, or educational purposes, and that it was pursuing those objectives and purposes at the time of the injury to the plaintiff, and that the plaintiff was a beneficiary. The Newark Community Health Center, the testimony from the defense was that they had a sliding scale fee for services, and that when a patient like the plaintiff, who was a Medicare recipient, had insurance, they accepted their full insurance payment. This court has held in the Ryan decision that when a charitable organization, when a nonprofit organization is organized for educational or religious purposes, there does not need to be any investigation into the source of funding. Source of funding is otherwise important because the whole purpose of the act is to protect those charitable contributions, and the legislature wanted to inspire those kinds of contributions. So that's why a source of funding is necessary in many situations. So what happened here is that a Newark Community Health Center introduced eight photographs of websites, and they all applied in the years 2021, 2022. There was nothing for the year 2019. And they alleged that they were an educational institution, and they did have that in their articles of incorporation. But those website photos, one of them is just a notice that it's Black Maternal Health Week. Another is a notice that it was World AIDS Month. Notice at the Women's Health System Symposium, there was a notice of HIV Testing Day, a notice recommending back-to-school immunizations, a notice that United Healthcare Community Plan recognized the ongoing work of Newark Community Health Center, colorectal cancer awareness month, a readiness for back-to-school notice. On this, without even looking at that information, without even looking at the paltry evidence that was supplied that this was an educational institution, the appellate division of the Superior Court, as well as the trial court, concluded that it was educational just because it lists that. It lists education in one of its goals. This is the first time something like this has happened, and clearly it doesn't meet description of educational. The types of organizations that have been deemed educational, the obvious ones, the schools, all the types of various schools we have in this country, and also, Little League organizations and athletic clinics. And the reason this court and the Appellate Division of the Superior Court has deemed those types of organizations as educational is because they do provide an education for the mind and soul, not a traditional education, but they build character. Pomeroy decision, which was a Little League recognition of the Little League educational. The court held that it builds character, it teaches sportsmanship, honesty, loyalty, courage, and reverence to help children become happy and productive. Pomeroy defined education as the discipline of the mind or character through study or instruction. Certainly such discipline of the mind and character takes place in athletic clubs, Little League organization, boys and girls clubs. It also seems that is the primary objective for the existence of these entities. If medical practices are going to be deemed educational, every type of business can make that claim. Every type, just by creating some community awareness notices, because that's all that happened here. And that would completely do away with the mandate that was issued in Ryan by this court, that when it's not an educational or a religious organization, a source of funding is necessary. This court has also ruled that determining what kind of entity and whether an organization is operating consistent with its enabling documents is often a fact-sensitive inquiry. And obviously that need to happen here, and it did not happen in this case. Now, there was enough information supplied by the defense so that we know at this point it also would not pass the source of funding test. So rather than remand it for factual finding on that issue, I think that a decision just needs to be decided against them, because they supplied what they had. And what they supplied, first of all, they supplied just tax returns when they're supposed to, tax returns that listed, general contributions, when they're supposed to provide information of where those contributions came from. And the total sum is 0.3%. So even if their information is accurate and it came from charitable contributions, there's not a single case with a percentage that low that deems that kind of a percentage adequate funding to deserve the protection of the Charitable Immunities Act. 2% in the case of FK Integrity House, 2% was found inadequate. It's also a pretty good argument that Mrs. Smith was not a recipient of the benefications of the nonprofit organization, the medical practice. She didn't even know that it was a nonprofit. We supplied an affidavit where she said that she went there because of the convenience to her workplace. She was there, by the way, to get a birth control injection. And she had insurance, and she could have gotten the same treatment anywhere. So even though, it has high importance whether the organization, the alleged charitable organization is engaged in its stated purpose with a particular plaintiff, it's also important that the plaintiff be a beneficiary of this purpose, and she wasn't a beneficiary of anything that was charitable. My final argument was that in the event that this court agrees with the appellate division of the Superior Court and sets everything back for a couple of decades, based on the decision in Kuchera, the Section 8 of the Charitable Immunity Act puts a cap on a plaintiff's recovery of $250,000 when the defendant is engaged in medical purposes. And this clinic was practically a hospital. It did almost everything that a hospital does. This organization, they had many different clinics, but it
so,
did.
So that even if you prevail, counsel, is it your position that the cap, the $250,000 cap would apply to this defendant?
I think that there's an argument that it applies here. I think the much stronger case, the compelling case, is that this was not an educational institution. It was not engaged in educational purposes.
Just asking you the second question.
But I think that that would, I mean, I admit that would be stretching it, a place it hasn't gone yet, to say.
What?
Because even in Kuchera, which was an examination, an eye examination in a clinic, this court stressed the fact that there was a hospital, you know, that this was an organization that owned a hospital.
And so what is your position, leaving aside the issue of general, of an absolute immunity under the Charitable Immunity Act, what is your position as to whether the $250,000 cap should apply?
Representing my client zealously, and it would be in her best interest for it to apply. And I think the strongest argument there is that the statute, Section 8, does not specify hospital. It says hospital purposes. Why would the legislature say hospital purposes if they intended this to only apply to organizations that have a hospital?
So the answer is
yes. I would make that argument.
Why doesn't a clinic, or does a clinic, that solely treats indigent patients, that has exceptionally low salaries, that barely turns a profit, and that survives mostly off the charity care statute of the state, why couldn't that fall under subsection 7 as being charitable in nature? Why does it have to fall under subsection 8 as being for hospital purposes?
I don't think it has to fall into...
If I can just finish, though, because I really want to distinguish... I want to understand how we are distinguishing an indigent clinic from a massive healthcare system. No, I'm sorry, please.
But this wasn't just a clinic, by the way. This was a clinic that was owned by an organization that had many clinics. The New Jersey Healthcare, this defendant.
Let's just stick to my question, if we could. Okay. Could a healthcare clinic that serves indigent patients...
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble here.
But a healthcare clinic that serves indigent patients, that barely turns a profit, that pays very low relative salaries, and who gets a significant amount of funding from the state's charity care system, fall under subsection 7 and not 8.
There is nothing whatsoever, I think, in the case law and the statute itself that specifies that this determination is based on the wealth of the clinic or the poverty of it.
So in that sense, there you don't distinguish in any way from a clinic that serves indigent patients from a massive healthcare system, not-for-profit healthcare system, for purposes of subsection 8.
Well, again, I don't think a sole clinic would come anywhere near hospital purposes. This is an organization that has many clinics. And in Kuchera, you looked at the organization, you know, and what that organization owned. And this is an organization that owns practically everything, and its doctors do practically everything but a hospital. And I think they've argued that they don't have an emergency room either.
And isn't there...
But as to whether Section 7 or Section 8 should apply, I don't think the wealth is a factor. It's about the contributions.
Isn't the inquiry under Section... Shouldn't the inquiry look at the language of the statute and whether the nonprofit organization is organized exclusively for religious, charitable, or educational purposes in making the determination as opposed to characteristics of a particular organization or clinic that are not found in the statute or the case law as determining factors?
Can I ask you to speak up?
Yes, sorry about that. So I said, shouldn't the inquiry look to the statute, Section 7, to determine whether and use the language of the statute, whether the nonprofit, corporation, society, or association is organized exclusively for religious, charitable, educational purposes, to make a determination of whether that organization or entity falls within Section 7 or within Section 8, as opposed to looking to factors that maybe are not found in the statute or in the case law.
Well, the reality is that the statute doesn't define the situation very well. The courts have, and they've expanded the description.
But the court's definition of charitable, the court's definition of charitable purposes have been money that is individually donated by people, correct?
Right. True. Contributions from the private sector. Those are the kinds of contributions that have to exist. Government funding, one of the purposes of charitable immunity, the primary purpose is to protect and encourage those contributions, but a secondary purpose is to relieve some of the burden on government. So, contribution from the government that's substantial would go against charitable immunity, although it's not a deal breaker. It's all a question of proportion.
So you would exclude charity care funding from the state in a determination as to whether an entity was charitable in nature.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I think
that's just because the purpose of the statute is to protect private donations, and money that you get from the state is not a private donation.
That's right. It's there anyway. It doesn't need the protection of the act.
It might need a different protection, and there might be separate protections that apply to state entities. But this one is specifically about money contributed by private people or entities.
Exactly.
Is there anything else you'd like to present?
No, I think I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lemura.
Thank you. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. This case turns on words that the legislature chose and the words that it didn't. Section 7 grants immunity to entities organized exclusively for religious, charitable, or educational purposes. By its own admission, the center is not exclusively religious, charitable, or educational. It is also organized for scientific purposes, and therefore not exclusive, and Section 7 does not apply.
Does Section 8 apply?
Section 8 does not apply as well. And the reason for that is it has to be organized for hospital purposes. It would be disingenuous to say that you read 7 and 8 at different ways as that it's written.
So
and
you,
the way
you differ
that,
from your colleague over representing the plaintiff.
It's correct. And in this circumstance, there's a difference. If you look at the cases, Kuchera, where it's an ambulatory care that's in a building operated and owned by the hospital system of Meridian, in that situation, which is the hospital purpose. Now, if we're not reading 7 and 8 strictly and exclusively being defined as it's been defined before as solely and exclusive, then it would change. Because if you read the hospital purposes, she made an interesting argument with the hospital purposes that Section 8 doesn't say hospital, it says hospital purposes. And the purposes being provided there include all the services provided minus the inpatient.
So education, for example, educational purposes of a hospital, religious purposes of a religiously affiliated hospital, would that knock that defendant out of Section 8? See what I'm saying?
Oh, it's separate. So under that circumstance, I think they're separate and apart. And it demonstrates that the legislature knows how to add additional exceptions to the immunity clause when specified.
Sorry,
where they took that additional step.
We keep referring to Section 7 versus Section 8.
Yes.
But immunity for hospital purposes is found in Section 7 also, right? It's just Section 7B. So Section 7A talks about no nonprofit, corporation, society, or association organized exclusively for religious, charitable, or educational purposes. Then Section B, no nonprofit, corporation, society, or association organized exclusively for hospital purposes. Then Section C, no nonprofit organization, any nonprofit, corporation, society, or association organized exclusively for religious, charitable, educational, or hospital purposes. So it does seem to acknowledge that some, and we don't necessarily that it's not necessarily presented in this case, but it does seem to acknowledge that something could be exclusively for educational and religious purposes, or educational, religious, and charitable purposes, correct?
Well, I actually agree. It's a conjunctive, not the disjunctive. So I'm not saying it has to be solely religious, solely charitable, or solely the other one. I read it as a conjunctive where they all work. We could be one, you could be two, you could be three. But you know what you can't be? Scientific, literary, or one of the other excluded ones that are put in here. And that kind of follows all the law that's been going on. And you know, even the Latin, the expressio unius est exclusio alteris, I have no idea how to say that, but that is the expression of one thing means the exclusion of the others. And Ryan V. Rennie talking about that same principle. And here, this is a reaction, if we look at the case law, to the courts determining that there was no common, they're ending the common law immunity here. So they were responding. And they said, all right, we're not giving it all back. We're just going to give it back if you abide by what we put here. And that is exclusive for those three things, and even hospitals. But if you're a hospital and doing hospital purposes, we'll give a cap of 250. So they have made those specific things, which speaks volumes about what they chose. And the center here, in their own brief, on page 19 of its appellate brief, admits the center was promoting its scientific, charitable, and educational objectives at the time the plaintiff's accident. And on page 12, they wrote in their brief, of the respondent's brief, the same thing. Now, under the Abdallah case, talking about
and it's defendant actually seems to be taking green the chair. I'm sorry. Defendant seems to be taking the position that Section 8 does not apply to it. Am I right about that?
Yes, that's correct. The Kuchera, Green, Harwick, and all the cases talk about first, number one, you have to find out, was it formed for a purpose that was part of that Section 7? And it wasn't. They added in scientific, which is an excluded. It's one of the ones that is outside the exclusion. Number two, are they still promoting that purpose? That's when the law said, hey, let's look at what they're doing, right? And they just admitted in their briefing before your honors that they are still doing scientific purpose at the time that the injury occurred.
But of course they are. Hospitals do research. Hospitals take in residents.
This is not a hospital. This is a charitable. I believe this is a.
I'm saying hospitals. If what you're describing are functions that hospitals serve that are educational in nature, and you seem to be saying because they perform educational functions, they cannot be acting for purely exclusively for hospital purposes.
Oh no, that's not my argument. That's not my argument.
I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, my argument is they are formed for the purpose of scientific, which under the IRS code is to do research for future care to be provided to the public and increase it, which is separate and apart from educational. So by choosing scientific, which is not charitable, educational, or religious, which are, according to the statute, solely exclusive, they've got another one over here, which is scientific. So they chose not to be part of the statute, which the statute's very clear, and we're supposed to read as sole and clear as it's written. Those three, good, immunity, and the four they chose not to put in, outside the scope of the immunity, which is what the legislature stated. I understand the owner's argument. It's actually, if it was a hospital, and it was talking about a hospital purpose under Section 8, they do have residents, and those three. That was the Kuchera case, talking about providing a student the opportunity to learn. This is a center, and we're here as amicus talking about the Section 7, how they don't get to even look at Section 8 because of the fact that this is not, wasn't formed for hospital purposes, and Section 7 says they're not applicable to the immunity. So looking at those two, if you read them as they're written, it's exclusively for hospital purposes. Well, they're also doing scientific. The same argument I'm making for 7 would be disingenuous to not make for 8. So if 8 is hospital purposes exclusively, and then they're doing scientific and educational and charitable, I have to read Section 7 as written that way. And if you read it that way,
switched from 8 to 7 just then. You have to read 8 just to understand what you're saying.
You have to
read 8 to mean that if it's not exclusively hospital and it does educational, charitable, it's out of 8.
They all fall into so what the way Kuchera reads is all of those fall into hospital purposes. So it's okay.
It's all hospital
purposes. Right. That's how Kuchera read it, is obviously they provide education, as Your Honor stated. They provide charitable.
So why do you argue that Section 8 does not apply?
In this case, they're not a hospital. So they are a center organized by a large group. And if you read it as it's written, now, if we take Kuchera, and extend it to say that providing medical care services that a hospital would provide, similar to plaintiff's counsel had argued, and you're extending that, and it doesn't have to have, because the definition of hospital under the statute is 24-hour care. They do not provide that. If we no longer believe in 24-hour care, then yes.
That's not the definition of hospital under this statute, right?
Not under the statute, correct. Actually, they don't even say hospital. They say hospital purposes.
And there's no definition of hospital purposes for purposes of the CIA, correct?
You're correct. That's correct. And since we're looking at the text-based and fact-based, one could say that the hospital purpose is what they're doing because they could send to a hospital for inpatient care as well. They do have admitting privileges, so you'd have that opportunity. So the circumstances that you're looking at is, one, how is it formed? Two, are they still performing those purposes? And if it's charitable, then you have to send it back to see who's funding it. And then finally, are they a beneficiary of the works? Those are all the questions based upon our laws of DALA, Kuchera, Green, Harwick. And we have to determine here, does seven apply? Does eight apply? Or does neither apply? And if you're looking at this, we're told to look as the strict construction of the legislature, that they pick the words, and they said, scientific is not one of the foundational organization's purposes. And I believe the word of the law.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Canning?
I'm going to start off with the idea that the issuance of a payment for your services has never been determined to be a bar to charitable immunity. Colleges get payment, Little League get payment for uniforms, people pay, and they are still part of and receive charitable benefits. So that alone is not a basis for finding that there is no charitable immunity here. Next, as to educating. Education under the Oxford Dictionary, it means to give intellectual, moral, or social instruction to someone's, and doctors do educate their patients. Doctors, in particular, in their billing, specify how much time is spent educating a patient. And part of that, according to even the AMA guidelines, indicates that they are educated so they understand their health conditions, their treatment plans, and they need to have better self-managed care in terms of taking of medication. The doctors here are indeed educating and working with their patients as well as in providing them with medical assistance and care. We'll go back to the old standard, take two aspirin and call me in the morning. This shot may hurt. You might need to ice it afterwards and take an anti-inflammatory. You are due for your mammogram. You need to reduce your cholesterol. You need to cut the fatty foods. But they are educating while they are seeing their patients. As the scientific, the Beaker case itself indicated that the idea that someone is also engaged in scientific wasn't an issue. And that is a Supreme Court case from 2002, so that the word scientific in the charter was not even being discussed as an issue. And in that case, they indicate the charitable purposes alone can be relieving beneficiaries' bodies from disease and lessening the burdens on government. This court in Ryan versus Holy Trinity in 2002 indicated that the nonprofit group isn't required to show what level of income came from charitable donations. That was as it related to a mother's group that was giving education. We do take the position that this isn't an educational charity, and that we should be able to therefore assert the charitable immunity statute. I understand this is not Jim and Tammy Faye Baker abusing what is or is not a charitable organization. There is no proof that that is the case. It is brought up that this is a barely functioning nonprofit clinic. We are treating indigent people. We are giving a lot of free care to participants and people coming as patients to this clinic. We do take the position that we do get the charitable immunity. We do not believe we also fall under the umbrella of being a hospital, or it's specifically designed for hospital purposes rather than the treatment and care of our patients that are coming into the clinic setting.
Counsel, you're done with your opening statement?
Yes, I am.
So the Appellate Division found that the center qualified for immunity under Section 7 because it provided educational services. Can you tell us, based on the record, what specifically you're relying on to satisfy that?
Well, based on the record, I know they were relying upon the information being put out on the webpage, letting people know what was going on. I agree with that. I have no idea if this will or won't be remanded at all for further discovery, but I do believe, as I stated earlier, that doctors have a large role in educating their patients, and that is part of what does
happen. But this is an affirmative defense, and so you have to prove that you are an educational institution, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And why would you need discovery to do that? Wouldn't all of the information be in your possession?
Well, I wouldn't need any discovery. As a matter of fact, if it ended up being remanded as to doctors to conform consent, if you're going to make me guess, she got a shot. She filled out a document indicating she was being given instructions about it.
Sorry, so you just said you don't need discovery. So what's the evidence in the record of the education that your client was providing?
That's the information. They only provided the information on the web versus the information as to the doctor's treatment plans and protocols.
And how could we consider that if it's their burden to produce the evidence and they did not produce it because they are trying to raise an affirmative defense? How could we not say the affirmative defense fails because they did not submit evidence to support the allegation?
Well, part of that would be that every motion for summary judgment is denied without prejudice. And what you're saying is that you want to make this with prejudice and make a permanent finding rather than letting us also try another argument as to the same educational purpose. I don't know that that's how the law automatically works with regard to the case.
But you agree it is an affirmative defense and your client has the burden to prove it, correct?
That is correct.
And the proof that you're telling us to rely upon to show that the center was organized exclusively for educational purposes is 8 snapshots of a website?
Well, that would have been what was available at that time versus other posts that would already been taken down from the years before. The idea that they never posted.
Submitted, for example, an affidavit where someone lays out, this is all of our educational programming, and you did not do so, correct?
That is correct. That was not.
And today, you made the argument during your opening statement that you didn't focus on the web pages or the notices with regard to colorectal cancer month or other notices that were on the website. You seem to be focusing specifically on education provided by doctors and the fact that doctors provide a significant amount of education while treating patients. So was there any affidavit from any doctors or anyone from the health center that indicated during the course of treatment, this is the education that is provided to people who are treated at the health center?
No, there was not as part of the record.
If we accept your argument about doctors educating patients, what type of medical facility would not then qualify as an educational institution, one organized exclusively for educational purposes?
Probably none.
So a solo practitioner physician who treats pediatrician or internist, family practice.
Well, I'm sorry. Are you a solo practitioner is probably not a nonprofit, so they would get no types of immunity.
Can a clinic be organized exclusively for charitable purposes?
Yes, it can.
And how would we determine whether a clinic is organized exclusively for charitable purposes?
As to whether or not the patients that are coming there are being treated without regard to their ability to pay, which is what is happening here.
That's the only factor to look at? Wouldn't we look at source of funding?
In my opinion, that's not in the absolute statutory language that you need to look at source of funding. The legislature was capable of adding to the statute itself that source of funding should be one of the inquiries. They did not do so. This is the equivalent of, I know that Amici cited to the De Prospero case on the verbal threshold on statutory interpretation. I'll go right to that one. In the verbal threshold statute, it was clear in the legislative intent that they wanted a two-pronged test, that they wanted it to be held equivalent to the Tort Claims Act immunities, where it have to show not only a permanent injury, but a substantial impact on their life. They wanted that there. but they didn't put it in the statute. So you did not do that, and you found they only have to show that there's the permanent injury factor, which was in there. So to go to the idea that the legislature here, while they may have wanted to protect charities because of the source of funding, did not indicate that a source of funding inquiry needed to be made in order to determine whether or not a charitable institution existed.
They didn't indicate that an ability to pay question, and you're saying that that should be the test. They didn't indicate
the ability to pay, no, should not be the test. It's whether or not they're making them pay. In other words, this plaintiff here, and I believe it's in the record, we would not have sent her a subsequent bill if she did have a copay.
But that's what not in the statute.
What we take what insurance pays or what the person is able to pay, but we do not make people pay. We provide a lot of free care.
But that's not in the statute either.
That is correct. The statute requires to be nonprofit in our organization and to be charitable. It does not require us to have private donors, public donors. It doesn't say what type of donors they need to be.
Are you arguing that you are organized exclusively for charitable purposes pursuant to Section 7?
I believe that we are organized for both charitable as well as educational purposes, correct. I think we're doing both.
Would you consider the government to be organized for charitable purposes? If there was a government health clinic and it was funded by government funding and it was providing free health care, no one had to use any kind of insurance, it was just free.
That would go under Tort Claims Act, both federal and state. If you're asking me whether or not, because it's free, they're also claiming nonprofit status like happened in the federal court case, I do not know. I don't know how it would be organized. But if they're not saying I'm a nonprofit as well, and you get that somewhat with
so there's a
charter schools. I believe charter schools get both Title 59 defenses as well as charitable immunity defenses.
So a nonprofit that was being funded solely by the government and that was providing services for free, you're saying would be a charitable purpose exclusively?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a government-run business. It did not organize itself as a charity. Why would it get charitable care?
I thought you were saying as long as the services were free, then, and it's run by a nonprofit.
It's run by a nonprofit. That is correct.
So I said a nonprofit where they're receiving all of their funding from the government and they're providing services for free.
Yes. To me, that, I don't know what extent Planned Parenthood does that, but yes, I would say yes, they're entitled to charitable immunity.
Thank you.
If we were to reach the question of the source of funds analysis, is the record complete to make a determination at this point?
I honestly do not know to answer that. I wish I could say I handled it all below. I did not. I do know they gave tax returns, and plaintiff herself has indicated they wanted more information in order to reach that determination and to find that information out.
I'm asking you, based on the existing record, is a court in a position to make a determination? Is the record complete?
I'm going to say probably not, because all you have are tax returns as part of the record rather than whatever other records may exist in terms of who's donating and what they have donated and how the monies have been obtained, either by fundraising, by private donation. There's not a lot there.
But again, it would be your client's burden to submit the information because it's an affirmative defense, correct?
On the source of funding issue? Do you want me to go back to, in my opinion, the source of funding does not matter. It's not part of the statute.
But if we reach the source of funding, yes, then it will matter.
Yes.
Although I thought I heard you arguing earlier that you think our case law requiring the source of funding analysis is bad law and we should not follow it. I thought that's what you were saying. That because
case law from 2002 by the same panel indicates that the source of funding doesn't matter for that parent group.
No. That's because it was found to be educational. Our case law says that if it's a charitable purpose, then you have to do the source of funds analysis. I thought you were arguing that even for a charitable purpose, no source of funding requirement should be existent because it's not found in the plain text of the statute, and therefore our cases were wrong, I thought is what you were arguing.
That is what I argued, yes.
Okay.
Other questions, anyone? Counsel, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement.